everybody, and welcome back to the Enterprise Dish. We are hanging out with our special guest, Mr. Nick Fillingham, hanging out in the very Pacific Northwest of Seattle, Washington. How's it going today, Nick?
It's going well. Thank you, Brad.
It's always good to be here. And last time we were here, we were talking about what is Microsoft 365. And let's make the optimistic decision here that everybody's going to the shelf, grabbing that off, and that they are now looking to deploy it, which is... it's a challenge. It's a big deal. It's not something you're going to do overnight. And in this episode of Enterprise Dish, we're going to be diving a little bit deeper into how you can accomplish that. And Microsoft actually has resources available. Nick is a good guy to talk about that stuff. And Nick, what do you got for us today?
Yeah, so if you remember from the previous episode, we talked about Microsoft 365 is, if you break it down to its kind of basics, it's really three things. It's a Windows 10 license, it's an Office 365 license, mm-hmm. and then it's the Enterprise Management Suite, which is all of the sort of infrastructure tools, the identity tools that come in EMS. So it's Azure Active Directory, Intune, your SCCM license, et cetera, et cetera. So deploying Microsoft 365 isn't like pushing out an app in the sense that it's not one thing. It's multiple things. It's bringing your devices up to Windows 10, if they're on a previous version of Windows. It's migrating from a perpetual or an on-premise version of Office to Office 365. And then it's also setting up that management infrastructure in the background. So it's either setting up a hybrid Active Directory with on-prem AD and Azure Active Directory, or it's migrating entirely to the cloud-based Azure Active Directory, and then setting up the various kind of management tools, whether that's Intune or a combination of Intune and SCCM. So, yeah, as you said, a Microsoft 365 deployment is potentially quite involved mm-hmm. because it's not just one thing. It's not just pushing out a single app. It's kind of making a bit of you're moving multiple things in kind of multiple stages. And so to help with that, we've built something that we call the Microsoft 365 Desktop Deployment Center. And I think, Brad, can we do some magic and put the URL kind of here on the car or anything?
Time, and I will tell you, Nick, I figured out how to do it.
I know, I saw it. I saw you do that. I saw you do it. You set my expectations low, and then you superseded them. You exceeded them, sir. And I salute you for that.
Under promise, over deliver is a theme of life. But yes, there will absolutely be a link in the video. Well, probably not here, right where Nick did it. And then we'll also drop it down so it's clickable in the post and all that stuff to help you get to that deployment center. Because Nick, there's a lot of good stuff there.
We do. And actually, there is a short URL version, which is aka.ms/whack. How to shift, one word, how to shift.
We're going to use
shift
that one.
is the kind of the campaign name that we kind of refer to when we talk about moving to Microsoft 365, but then also very specifically moving from Windows 7 to Windows 10 or Office on-prem to Office 365, et cetera. So aka.ms/whack how to shift is going to get you to the Microsoft 365 Deployment Center. And it's an amazing resource. And the first thing you're going to see is what we kind of affectionately refer to as the wheel. And that's because it looks like a wheel. It has 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. It has 8 outer steps. Mm-hmm. And then there's sort of like 2 inner steps, and I'll kind of get to that in a minute. But you can kind of enter the wheel at any point, depending on where your company is in terms of their sort of technology modernization or kind of cloud modernization kind of path. So if you're at the very, 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 very beginning and you've done nothing, and let's say your entire estate is Windows 7, mm-hmm. it's Office perpetual, so it's Office 2010, 2013, 2016, even 2019, and you're all on-prem management. So maybe that's on-prem Active Directory and SCCM, et cetera, you would start at the very, very beginning. And that very first step at the top of the wheel, kind of at the 12 o'clock position, is desktop and app readiness. And then that's really about kind of inventory. So looking at all of the devices that you have in your ecosystem, all of the apps that you have on those devices, and then anything that the app is dependent on, whether it's a driver, some kind of macro, some kind of add-in. So it's all about, that's the inventory step. And then working out from there, what do you need to do to get those devices, those apps, and those drivers ready? And I think we'll talk about that a little bit later on, maybe not in this episode, maybe another episode. We'll talk about one of the tools called Desktop Analytics, which helps in that step.
So Nick, I have a question for you.
Yep,
I got a question for you. So does this, what about mobile devices? How does this play into, because obviously the real obvious one is like, hey, here's a Surface laptop right here. That one's going to be in there. Your servers are going to be in there. But what about, do mobile devices play into this, or how does that fit into the scenario?
Totally. So when we think of mobile devices, we really think of mobile phones and tablets, and basically devices that are managed through what's called the MDM channel. That stands for mobile device management. That's almost the limit of my knowledge of the MDM channel is what the acronym stands for. But one way to think about this is these are devices that don't run the Windows operating system. Mm-hmm. So if it's an Android device, it's running the Android OS. If it's an Apple device, it's running either iOS or maybe the new what's the new iPad OS called?
I can't remember. I think it's just called iPad OS.
Well, there you go. So it's these. Think of these as non-Windows OS devices, but where we use either the MDM channel or the MAM channel, the mobile app management channel, in order to manage either parts of the device or just individual apps. So when we think about those devices, we're not going to be upgrading those to Windows 10. Those devices don't run Windows 10, but those devices absolutely can connect into the Microsoft Cloud through our identity platform, and then obviously connect into Microsoft 365 services like Office 365, whether that's an app or through a service like OneDrive or through the Office suite. So from a readiness perspective for those devices, it's really just about ensuring that those devices, you know about those devices, right? You know which users have them. They can then get working out how they kind of get enrolled into your company tenant, and making sure that you have the various kind of identity tools, whether it's Azure Active Directory, up and running, and then obviously the Office 365 service, so that all of those parts can kind of get connected together. And you can give your users access to their files and their apps, et cetera, et cetera. So one way to think about mobile devices is these are the devices not running the Windows operating system and that won't be upgraded to the Windows operating system, but will connect into the Microsoft 365 or the Microsoft Cloud and Office 365 services. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no. The only reason I bring that up is I know that Microsoft 365 touches a lot of things. And as you're moving through the process, you want to make sure that everybody who's, because a lot of people bring their own devices these days. You want to make sure, I was just trying to cover the bases that when people do this, especially in a smaller business environment, that they're not afraid they're going to nuke their employee's phone by any means.
Right, and that is a really important question, right? And that is a decision that IT kind of need to make, that when their employees are going to be accessing corporate data and corporate services on their personal device, how does that IT team want to handle that scenario?
Yep.
And so one scenario is that they have the devices fully enrolled through Intune with their company tenant. And that means that the IT team actually has some level of control over the device. So if the device is lost or stolen, it can be wiped. Or if certain parts of the device can be wiped in terms of having corporate data removed, or they could choose to simply just use MAM or the mobile application management, and then essentially create. I'm going to paraphrase this heavily here, so experts, I hope this doesn't make you upset, but sort of create this sort of ring fence or this fence around the app. And so it's saying, like, we're not going to take control of the device. The device still belongs to you. We have no control over the device, but we are going to take control over this app. This is an app that you use to access our corporate resources. So we kind of have admin level, for want of a better term, at this app. So if something happens, we can turn off access to this app. We can kind of wipe the data that's associated with this app, et cetera, et cetera. So that's really a decision for IT teams to make. But with Microsoft 365, with Intune, with Azure Active Directory, they have all the tools they need to be able to determine what level of access and what that access looks like for employees bringing their own personal devices, especially Android and iOS mobile devices, into the enterprise setting.
Very cool. Very cool. I mean, that's a good holistic, that's not even a high level. I mean, that's a pretty good low level look at how everything is playing out.
Thanks, Brad. And hopefully most of it was accurate too. a lot of the times in my effort to sort of paraphrase something, I might have kind of got something a little bit wrong there, but we'll see. Someone will correct me in the Twitters and I'll be mortified, but we can move on. That's fine. So if we go back to the wheel,
yep.
We started at 12 o'clock position, yep. And then I'll just kind of quickly kind of walk through the other steps. And so the next is directory network readiness. And that's you know, I won't explain all the steps. What I will say is that on that page, mm-hmm. On that desktop deployment center, each of those, if you kind of scroll down beyond the wheel, you'll yep. actually see each of those steps outlined, and you'll see a YouTube video that goes into what is involved in those steps. Mm-hmm. The first video is actually our good friend, Brad Anderson. Oh, yeah. So Brad actually kind of walks through that 12 o'clock position and that first kind of getting started, mm-hmm. and how to kind of use the wheel. And then Jeremy Chapman kind of takes on from there, and Jeremy walks us through all the rest of the steps. So device and app readiness, directory and network readiness, moving on to office and line of business app delivery, user files and settings. So how do you identify if you have so Windows 7 devices in your estate, mm-hmm. how do you identify where the users are keeping and storing their files and where their settings are, and how do you make sure that those files and settings get moved up into the cloud so that as you upgrade that device and then move to the new platform, those files and settings can come down seamlessly and can help them migrate kind of faster and seamlessly. I said seamlessly twice there, more easily. Then it moves on to security and compliance and how to think about that and what tools are available to create your kind of security and compliance mm-hmm. Configuration. And then we move on to operating system deployment. So step six is about actually finally getting around to deploying Windows 10 and getting around to deploying Office 365 and Office 365 Pro Plus. And then we move into really the servicing and the maintenance. So step seven is now talking about, okay, so how do you handle the fact that Windows and Office release feature updates? Well, Office 365 is every month. Windows is kind of roughly every 6 months. How do you utilize rings? How do you set up kind of groups and channels in order to kind of manage that process? And again, all of the tools and guidance that any IT team is gonna need to kind of understand that process and go through about setting up their own process and their own cadences is listed out here on this website. There's great resources in terms of white papers, videos, and then obviously all the tooling itself is inside of SCCM and Intune.
Yeah.
And then moving on to kind of that final step, step eight, it's about, okay, now what? Now you've got this stuff on your end user devices. How does the end user use it? How do they learn about it? How do they know now how to use these new tools? And so that's all about user communication and training, what resources and assets are out there for IT teams to help get their users up and running as soon as possible and as quickly as possible with as little disruption. And really the great news is that, you know, one of the things the Windows and Office engineering teams do here at Microsoft is they spend lots and lots of time and cycles and resources on user experience research and making sure that when they change something that is in the user experience, that is in that kind of that's UI or part of the shell, that they're doing it in a really logical way, mm-hmm. that it's not a jarring experience, and that if you do have a lot of muscle memory from the previous way, there's a smooth transition to whatever that new way is. And so that's sort of a very fluffy way of saying that we do take it really seriously, that yep. when we move your cheese, you want to know where your cheese has gone to and you want to find it really quickly. Mm-hmm. And so we're cognizant of that. And hopefully we're getting better over time of making sure that, you know, if we're going to move a setting, if we're going to move a box, if we're going to move a feature, that we do it in a logical way, hopefully with a tooltip or some kind of toast or notification that helps you go find it. If it's something that you've been accessing in a particular place or a particular way for many, many years. So that's kind of a quick kind of look at the wheel,
yeah.
At the outer ring of the wheel. I don't know, Brad, do you actually have the way at some point, Brad, can we actually visually show it here? Is it going to be?
Oh yeah, it's definitely going to be displayed up multiple times so that people can watch along if they don't want to click the link. That way it's just all nice, neat little package form.
I totally should have asked you that question before we started recording, but I like how our production meeting is actually kind of baked into the recording here.
It's why, you know, you work through problems and challenges together, Nick. This is a collaborative podcast, if you will.
Excellent. So now, one thing I will say is that this deployment center wheel is not just for customers that are moving to the entire Microsoft 365 mm-hmm. suite. So if you're already on Windows 10, but you want to move from Office Perpetual to Office 365, then you can absolutely kind of pick up where you are on the wheel and just utilize the resources and the tools here to help you with that particular move. And same with Windows. If you're already, you know, if you've already set up a hybrid or a cloud-based identity, if you've already moved to Office 365 but you're still in Windows 7, you can jump in here and just kind of take advantage mm-hmm. of stuff mm-hmm. from 7 to 10. So that's what I talked about earlier on. You can kind of enter the wheel at many different places or any place.
Yep.
And so it's a really great resource. And for any IT team out there that's either migrating or deploying Microsoft 365 or the individual components, I really kind of encourage you to go to the website, read through it, bookmark it, and then kind of reference it as you need to, moving forward.
That is good stuff, my friend. I was getting pinged on Skype and I forgot to set myself to do not disturb.
Uh-oh. Who was it?
It was part of the execution team, not execute the people, but executing tasks were asking for things. And I'm like, I'm podcasting. I can't be doing that.
Right. This is important.
It is. And Nick, I want to point out one thing here, because we've heard this from people who are skeptical about moving. They say, well, our last major migration was from XP to 7. And everybody always uses the word, pretty much paraphrasing, of a nightmare. And I think it's fair to say, and I've done this myself, and I know other people, and you're probably even more familiar with it, 7 to 10 is not anything like XP to 7. That was architecturally a major shift. This is much more of like sliding in, if you will.
Yeah, I mean, we don't want to trivialize the process. Sure. You know, for a lot of customers and for a lot of customer configurations out there, it is really complex. If you have a very large estate, mm-hmm. if you have a very diverse estate of devices, you know, if you have multiple OEMs and multiple models of those OEMs, you know, there are some customers out there that might have hundreds, if not thousands, of different devices across, yeah. you know, across their entire estate. If you have 50,000 or 100,000 employees. Now, admittedly, there's not that many companies that have that, but even if you have 10,000 employees, you're going to have laptops and PCs on that mm-hmm. in that estate that have been purchased over the years at lots of different times. So, you know, there's going to be tens, dozens, maybe even hundreds of different models. And that means you have to think about different sets of drivers. You have to think about different types of storage technology. You have to think about different types of memory allowances. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, depending on how your network is set up too, how your administration is set up, some of these users may have admin level access and so or variations of. And so now they've got their own apps installed. You know, some of them installed Skype, some of them yep. installed VLC, some of them installed Visual Studio Code or any other sort of tool or app that they kind of use on and off in their day. And so there's a lot of complexities here. But the good news is that Windows 10 and Windows 7 share so much of the same sort of, again, I'm going to paraphrase this here. Yep. I'm sure there's a much more technically accurate way of saying it, but the fundamentals of the operating system are so compatible between 7 and 10 that the kind of nightmares that customers saw moving from XP to 7, which was in some ways a very, very profound shift in the way the operating system worked. That just doesn't happen in Windows 7 to 10. Like a Windows 7 app just runs on Windows 10 because the foundations of Windows 7 that enable that app to run mm-hmm. are, if not identical, at least almost entirely compatible on Windows 10. And so that was where a lot of those issues with Windows XP were. Yep. That the platform itself evolved so significantly from XP to 7 that a lot of apps, mainly it was drivers that were the huge issue, that the model just changed so significantly that taking a driver or an app that worked on Windows XP mm-hmm. and bringing it to Windows 7 was not always a simple thing. It could be quite complex because there could be some ways that driver was written or that app was written that only worked on the Windows 7 platform. And that's why we had to create Windows XP compatibility mode. Yep. And then that in and of itself kind of wasn't a fix-all for everything. We just don't have that challenge with Windows 10. That's not to say there's not compatibility issues, and that's not there's drivers and apps that don't work on Windows 10 or need some help to work on Windows 10. But we're talking about a teeny tiny percentage of problems that customers are going to face versus with XP, it was a lot bigger. Did I in any way answer your question or address that comment that you made?
Yeah, I think, I want to say close enough. I think you hit the point. I mean, first off, there's no exact answer, right? We could even say the vast majority of people may not have issues, but there's always going to be challenges because everybody's environment. First off, I want to point out, I like the word that you use, estate.
Yes.
I like that name because, first off, estate is typically something of value that we think about, right?
And your
organization is obviously very valuable. Why am I getting feedback all of a sudden? That's weird.
Did I do it? What did I do?
I don't know. I just got a weird feedback. Anyways, I'll cut that out. Anyways, Nick, I like that you use the word estate, by the way, because estate means something of value. And obviously your environment is very valuable, right? It's not just a set of boxes. It's not just things that you just go press a button and they turn on. These are revenue generating parts of your business. And I haven't heard that word before, but I like it. I'm going to steal it.
Yeah, I think estate's also good too, because to me, when I think of estate, I mean, admittedly, I think of Downton Abbey, and I think of, you know, some massive, like, pastoral kind of English countryside with beautiful kind of palatial kind of castle-y thing made out of sandstone and servants and stuff. But I also think of is, I'm gonna draw this analogy out to its absolute limit. I think in the fictional world of Downton Abbey, is Downton Abbey real? Is there a real Downton Abbey, or is that all entirely fictional? Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I know what the show.
Yeah, TV show.
I don't know if it's an actual. I mean, it might be kind of like Gotham, maybe, in Batman.
Here's where I was going to go. The Downton Abbey estate, as I understand it, is this huge, like, county, maybe, in England or some fictional part of England. And there's lots of farms on it. And there's, you know, those farms make food, and they're animal farms and they're vegetable farms. And then there's, I don't know, there's properties where they generate revenue from rent and all that kind of stuff. But it's kind of like it's diverse. It's really diverse. There's lots of different people living on that estate, lots of different buildings, lots of different businesses, large and small. And they all sort of, they're sort of part of a community, but they have a lot of diversity. And again, I'm really stretching this analogy to its absolute limit. But that's another reason I agree with you. I like the word estate, because estate does denote value, but I think it also denotes diversity. It means that you don't just have one thing. I think if you had one thing and you have a lot of it, I don't think that's an estate. That's something else. But if you have a lot of something and it's lots of different things, I think maybe an estate kind of is much more applicable. Yeah. So that's really in reference to the fact that it's valuable, it generates revenue, but also there's lots of different things that make up that estate.
Yeah. It is a good word.
I spent
word.
Way too much time on that analogy. I apologize.
No. It's good. You really got to drive it home, right? That's the point. Yeah. Like, if you're going to commit, go all in. Don't just dinker around.
But all right.
As we wrap it up here on the back of the book of this podcast, one of the things we like to do, as people are very familiar with, is the dish. And, you know, what's happening in your world? Exercise, farm animals, TV show related. You know, what's just happening in the great north? I always want to say northeast, but it's definitely the northwest.
It's northwest. But I am from the southeast. I don't know how one...
Yeah, Australia.
We're definitely south. I don't know how you denote east or west when you're just kind of in the generic southern hemisphere.
Because eventually you'll get around to it whichever way you go.
Right. But if you kind of look at... I was going to say, look at this. Oh, how do we go side by side again? That just happens dynamically, doesn't it? There we go.
Oh, no, I'm switching it. I can...
Oh, you're doing it? Look at this. So somehow we're like the Antipodean... And look at this, like, I'm Southern Hemisphere Brad. Yep. So like, I have nothing up here, but I got a beard. And you're like baby face smooth, but you have a beautiful mop of hair. And then we're both in our kind of blue clothes.
Blue's a good look.
It's a good look. But we did not, just for the record, not coordinate this. We probably should have, but we didn't. So this is, there must be some like Vulcan mind meld thing going on here. That's why. We'll see if we both end up in the same clothes tomorrow, and that'll maybe help prove it. What's going on in the world of fitness? I need to get more fit.
Yeah, that's always a theme, right?
Yeah. A colleague who I follow on the Twitters, Michael Niehaus, who
yes, runs, yes. Familiar with him.
Who, who runs the autopilot program, works for Brad Anderson. He just passed a milestone, which I was very, very jealous of, and it's something that I would love to do. I think I'm going to remember this correctly. He just passed 365 consecutive days where he ran every day.
Woo.
365. And he's a pretty honest fellow, so I'm going to assume he didn't kind of flub a few of those numbers. So he ran every day for a year. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I did every day for a month once. Mm. And I'm still cashing in on that accomplishment with people. I think that was like 3 years ago. And I still just tell anyone that I meet like now, did you know that I ran every day? And exactly. I think that was years ago. So I'm gonna try and get back to running every day for a month. Let's see if I can do a month, and then we'll see if I can push that out. And maybe one day I can get to the Michael Niehaus level of running every day for 365 days. What about you? You're a runner, swimmer? What do you do?
I go to the gym. Well, it's every other day. So some weeks it's four times.
Yeah, you look like you go to the gym.
Yeah, sometimes it's three times, two, whatever. Roughly go to the gym unless I cut the grass, then whatever. But my big thing is, so both my wife and I have an Apple Watch, which is great and terrible because
we have one each, or you share one watch?
No, each. Okay. we are literally tied at the wrist.
she's under the desk right now, just like, come on, Brad, finish the podcast. I gotta go do my stuff.
Hold on, sweet. but the thing that it allows you to do, one, is we can see each other's activities, but you can also challenge each other. And one of the things, my personal goals for the year is every month, the watch that controls my life gives you a new challenge. And right. It's sometimes it's either hit a number of exercise minutes in a day, every single day or whatever. In this month, it is actually to be standing up 14 hours, not 14 hours straight, but stand up during the hour for 14 hours every single day of the month, every single day, which doesn't, and they're like, oh, that's easy. But you got to remember, sometimes if you sleep in on a Saturday or Sunday and you just don't feel like 14 hours is obviously more than half the day, you've got to stand up. So it's, that's primary driver of just kind of routine, and it's definitely not running 365 days a year. And so like last month I had to average, I think it was 500 calories of move every day. Which again, on a day you go to the gym, not a problem. That Saturday where you drank too much Friday night and you're laying on the couch when you got to get 500 calories burned, it kind of stinks. But it gets you up and moving, and especially for somebody who works out of the house, that's a pretty important thing to make sure you keep moving and the joints don't just seize up on you.
All right. Well, there's a plus one in the box for potentially having an Apple Watch with your spouse to challenge each other on physical acts of strength.
See, the thing is like Apple's probably going to get to the point where you can like assign things like mow the grass, leaf blowing, and then it's just going to go downhill, and that's when I'll turn the.
How many calories do you get for, or how many steps or whatever it is, mowing the grass? Like how do you quantify that as a piece of fitness?
So there's multiple ways. Like you can manually tell your watch that you're doing an activity, and then it will track. But typically, what happens is it can tell you have an elevated heart rate for a sustained amount of time, and then it'll be like, "Hey, are you doing an outdoor walk or whatever?" Based on your GPS and all that. But when I cut my grass, and I don't have a particularly large lot, it is 2 miles. It's 2 miles of walking behind the lawnmower.
See, I have a ride on lawnmower, so I think actually if I cut my grass, it's probably negative calories.
It's because you're eating the popcorn like as you're.
Yeah, it's the two beers as I'm kind of driving my knee.
The lines aren't so straight at the end of the cutting, but it's the journey that matters, right?
That's very true.
Very cool. Well, Nick, we very much appreciate you stopping by today, giving us the wheel of information. Obviously, those links are going to be down below. And if you're just getting started on your journey, make sure to check that stuff out because it's only going to help you. And it's not going to cost you anything to get those resources. I mean, why wouldn't you take free help? So links
take down free below. Help.
Free stuff.
All right. Thanks, Brad.
Yep. Catch you right back here next time, Nick. To everybody else, make sure you hit that subscribe button down below, and we'll be back again in the near future with another version of the Enterprise Dish.